Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Bowlology Report. Damien Fleming here. As always, bigger lockdowns in Victoria, feeling for everyone around the state. Not that it's not a problem everywhere in Australia and in the world, but stay safe, keep doing the right thing. Joining me, as always, well, for the second week in a row, the captain of the Victorian cricket team, a man who opted cricket over a promising tennis career. He actually beat Nick Kyrgios in a junior tournament. It's Pete Hanscom.
Oh, Flem, with these introductions, I'm going to have to keep coming back each week. That's just fantastic.
Was it a big choice, tennis?
No, not even close, mate. Tennis was good fun. Absolutely loved playing it, but I was getting beaten by guys 2 years, 3 years, my junior, and I saw the light pretty quickly there, and cricket was going well.
So you didn't really beat Nick Kyrgios, did you?
No.
I just added that because it's how rumours start too. Like,
I'm happy to go with it. Like, if you want to throw it out there, maybe put it in a tweet, see what he says back. He wouldn't remember beating him or not. Let's go with it.
I think I'll edit my apology out and just announce it, because AB de Beers, if you've seen, you know, like, he was number one rated squash player in South Africa. He's off scratch golf, and there's about eight things, yeah. And then I think there's only three that are correct. But if you just keep giving it a bit of oxygen,
yeah, if it gets massive. Out there, Glenn, people will start to believe it. So I'm happy to go with it if you're with it too.
Okay, I'll leave it in then. Hey, we're talking about the lockdowns. What does that mean for you guys at Victorian Cricket? Because up until now, you know, professional sportsmen, you've had some exemptions about training. You know, what's happened this week?
Yeah, a bit of a, ever-changing environment and something that that we're working closely with the government each day. And you know, funnily enough, today we went in, we've got that exemption and training as usual. And then halfway through training, the big chief, Sean Graff, pulls us in. Yeah, you know, when he comes out to talk to the boys.
Strutting in, big chest.
Oh, yeah, had the chest protruding, mate, and looking good, looking very good. But in his booming voice, told us that as of tonight, the Junction Oval is being closed or being shut down as we wait for more government reassurance or government exemptions based on whether we can or can't train. And I think that's just basically because the government would have an influx of businesses asking, you know, what's going on, that they can't respond to everyone straight away.
Because up until now, would you think that you were building nicely for a Shield season, you know, to go away and get some practice games before, you know, potentially going to Queensland or whatever?
Yeah, we'd started skills, you know, maybe 6 weeks ago now, 5 weeks ago, and the boys were building nicely. We even ran a bloody 2K time trial this morning before Graffy came and talked to us. So, one thing, Graffy, be quicker. Second thing, S&C, like, come on, just plan that in a couple of days or next week or something.
Yes. But,
no, so we had to run a 2K time trial in pairs at different time slots in the morning, so that we could fit in with the COVID laws.
So is that the standard fitness test these days? And who's ripping it up for the Vicks?
Yeah, that's sort of the standard one. We've got 2K time trial and then a couple of gym things, liftings, one rep kind of stuff. And probably Will Sutherland is the dominator. Definitely of the 2K time trial. I think he ran maybe under 6:30 this morning. Without getting out of second gear. Meanwhile, I'm struggling along in middle of the pack, middle of the back at about closer to 7:30. But we'll say it was closer to 7:00. But you never know.
Anyone? Well, I've got a bit of a theory. Actually, Jane, Will's dad, James, was a good runner. Even though he's about 6'5", he's used in the squad. He was always up there. When I first started, it was just random. A fitness guy would turn up, and if we're training at the junk, we just have to run the lake. Do you know what I mean? Like you bowled 180 overs and then go run the lake. And because I played at South Melbourne, I was running the lake twice a week after training for that. So some weeks I'm running it three times.
You were dominating though the fitness testing then. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, the thing is not bad because I knew the wind breaks because I was doing it that much. We actually had some South Melbourne blokes who decided to swim across, but it actually took them longer, and to give it away as well, they were late, but they were wet, which is a bit of a giveaway. But then we got the beep test. Were you ever through a beep test stage?
The beep test was probably more high school for me.
Yeah.
The first test that I had coming into Victorian cricket was actually the yo-yo, which is kind of like a...
Yeah, it's a superseded
of the beep test. You kind of just have repeat efforts with a little bit of a break in between. But I think that got too hard for the S&Cs to set up. So now they basically just said, run in a straight line for 2K and we'll time you.
Well, generally we just copy whatever the AFL does, but 10 years later, let's be honest. But beep test for me though, like it was a real eye-opener. I'm a very slow runner myself, but I didn't have bad endurance. So, beep test, not bad until my knees went a little bit later. But it was a standard test for us. But when I got to the Aussie team, it was a real eye-opener because it was a way of obviously gauging how you're going and whether you were keeping your fitness and all that sort of stuff. But I noticed straight away, David Boone, right? Boone would get to 10 every time and just pull out. So he didn't improve, but he didn't go worse.
Smart.
And Steve Waugh, 8.
Wow.
Same. Never got less, never got more. And I remember there was one I got myself really fit and I got 14.5, which was, top for me. I dropped to 14 the next time, but I got a bit in trouble because I dropped 8 stages. But Booney only gets 10. Too professional, Booney.
Yeah, no, he's done that well. You never want to go too hard because then, if you have a bad day and you get lower than what you normally get, you're in trouble. So especially at the start of the preseason as well, you never make sure you come in too fit because you need to make sure you've got improvements throughout preseason.
So who's the best of that in the Victorian team? Consistency.
I'd say Seb Gotch is there. Is a good one for coming back, maybe a little underdone, but allowing himself enough time to really get up and firing for the season, and it just makes him look great, as he gets on this exponential curve basically of fitness, and it's praises all around. Well done, Seth.
Now we talked last week. What's happening else at home though? Yep. Any TV?
Well, not a great deal TV for me, mate. Now that I'm helping you out on the biology reports, of a lot of my time's been based around research and trying to find out some some interesting stuff, maybe some fun things. What about you, mate? What you've been doing this for years, so I dare say you've got a bit of time on your hands.
Yeah, I've been, Netflix has got me a fair bit, but I tell you what has on Fox Sports is the World Series Classic. So you tend to get people watching it and then asking you questions on social media, and the big one this week has been Australia versus Australia A, which was a series back in 1994-95. England were touring, Zimbabwe were touring. I think Cricket Australia or the ACB were worried about Zimbabwe's performance. Well, they should have been worried about England's as well, because Australia actually made the final. And we played them three times. It was such a weird series. So Australia A generally were the up-and-coming players. You know, Damian Martin was captain, Ricky Ponting. They had a couple of older guys, good veterans like Merv and Paul Rifle. I think Michael Bevan might have ended up in that. And we had sort of the older team. So I remember the first game, I thought something was up, because we played at the Gabba and I'm bowling to Queensland hero Matthew Hayden.
Yes.
And I've never copped so much shit on the boundary line in my whole life. And I remember
You're playing for Australia.
Well, I looked down at my badge, and just to reconfirm, I'm playing for Australia, and I'm getting out and out abused. The Victorian bowling to the Queensland hero. Yep. So I was starting to think, well, this could turn a bit ugly. So they make the finals, and we go to Sydney. All right, and the things I notice here is the selectors are worried; they want Australia to win. Paul Rifle, who's the best bowler for Australia A, comes over to us and they make him 12th man. So, which was weird, because I was 12th man in a previous game and Pistol said to me, this is not fair. You're the 12th best player in Australia, but the 23rd best player is playing. So that happened to Pistol on the reverse. Yeah, then there was this big altercation between McGrath and Hayden. Big Haydos got his big chest out. Glenn's chesting him as well. So I think that said to the viewers, this is absolutely serious.
Yeah.
But for me, I learned about the fickleness of cricket. Early in the summer, we're playing England in the test matches and we bowl first in the Sydney test, ball swinging everywhere. It was just a good year for cookers. I don't know if they're like red wines, if they have good years, but these red cookers, I wish we could have bottled them up. And bowling to a guy called Graham Gooch, who's an outstanding player, beat him three times and it was swinging heaps. So I just got closer and closer and closer. Bowl one on middle, bit of a dream ball, nick to heels, one for none, end of the over, walk down to fine leg at the SCG, standing ovation. And that's big. You know, for a Victorian to get a standing ovation, like I've been abused a bit in state cricket up there. So month and a half later, finals, Australia 8. I'm not going to lie to you, I had a reasonably big night. That was the protocol back then. I won't dob in who I was out with, but he's called the judge. And we bowled. Great man, Judgey Law. We need to get him on for a chat. He can maybe talk us through the story. Come on, and my great mate, Greg Blewett, he was the biggest improver that summer. So he wasn't starting with Australia A. Comes in and he's belting the ball everywhere. He's bowling his 10 overs. He is on fire and gets himself into the test team. But good mate of Blues, ran in, maybe a little bit hungover, a bit stiff. Three half volleys on leg stump, right? Which he just smashes for four.
Just helping out a mate though.
No. Maybe the first one. So, Pete, I've got none for 12 in the first over. Walked down to the same area at fine leg, which I did during the test match. Guess what? Got another standing ovation. Those fickle bastards, I tell you.
Mate, you go out of Victoria and it can be a different world.
It is a different world. But did you check out any of that Australia A stuff?
Funny enough, watching it. I watched a couple of the games, the one at the SCG and the one at the MCG, the games I saw. You featured nicely the one at the MCG, did you?
Yeah.
That one, I thought that's why you might have been re-watching them.
Yeah, it hurts me. I think I got 4 for 20. It doesn't go in your figures. It's not rated an international game. It would have got my average down.
Gee, that would have helped.
But I don't want to talk through how I got Hayden, Ponting, Robertson, George, all them. My memory of that game was Booney, right? This is the most animated I've ever seen him on the field. You know, Booney, big moustache, big image, but introverted character, and you'd never see his lips move. You know, he was a low talker, Booney, but what a great man. What a great man to have a beer with. But he got his only wicket for Australia. Emery, we're naming names. Phil Emery played for spin and was dismissed. I've never seen Booney go. Booney went off.
Booney's putting the ball down with two, maybe three revs on it. Mate, ball's going straight. he's a happy man after that, that's for sure.
He was pumped, but Australia nearly won both games. It went down to the last over.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they had the crowd on their back, and just going against you guys, that's extraordinary. Sort of typical Australian crowd, though, going for the underdog. Bit of that tall poppy syndrome, you know. Bring the elite back down and go for those underdog guys. But it was great that they were awesome games
and massive crowds as well. And I remember when the final nail on the coffin of Australia A was, like, Tubby Taylor, our captain, was not happy throughout. You know, these brash youngsters were just showing us up, really. We ran the victory lap, you know, which you do with the trophy, and we seriously got booed the whole way around. And knew to myself, Tubby, the look on his face was going, this is never going to happen again, and it didn't. And I put a poll question out there, who did you support? What do you think the percentage was, Australia versus Australia A?
Well, judging by that, I'm going to say Australia A by a country mile.
Yeah, about 3/4 of the vote.
Oh, there you go.
But who knows? We might see it again one day.
Yeah, yeah, bring it back. Good fun.
Pistol Pete's things you need to know in cricket this week.
Beautiful, lovely title as well. Might need a bit of work, but a little bit of news coming out this week. The IPL is set to be played, has been moved from normal March, April months, has been moved to September 19th to November the 10th, and to be played in the UAE. It's good that we're getting cricket to go ahead. I'm all for being able to play cricket. Unfortunately, those dates are also going to clash with, our Shield season, our domestic season here back home. So that'll be interesting to see what happens to a couple of players there.
Yeah, it's not the first time they've played in the UAE, so I think they're pretty confident, you know, they can get it going. There's a few stadiums there, but it'd be very interesting, isn't it, like building into a test series. But also with the lockdown at the moment, I'm really worried when domestic cricket will start in Australia too.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's talk of another thing is there's talk of these hubs for potential domestic cricket. This year, obviously, there's still a lot of water to go under the bridge there between the ACA and CA terms of how that's all going to look, what dates. You know, that might be, and in terms of whether we get a full season in, half season, or, you know, we wait for the Big Bash and the Test cricket to start and we go from there.
Yeah.
So,
wait and see.
Watch this space kind of thing. While we're on T20s, Australia and West Indies were set to be playing some T20s. That has been postponed as well, unfortunately, but I think we're all pretty well aware that was probably going to happen, considering the state of everything going on, especially in Victoria at the moment as well.
I think it was linked in if the T20 World Cup had gone ahead too. They were sort of like warm-up games, weren't they? So I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, exactly. Going over to England now, they've just finished their test series with the West Indies. And are now starting a test series against Pakistan pretty well today.
Tonight.
So get out, listen to this, put the TV on mute and listen to us talk while the game's on in the background.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, won't it? I mean, you played test cricket against Pakistan. I mean, they're a seriously talented team. You know, I just worried that Wendy's won the first test, didn't they? Like, it was sort of even. The preparation didn't really come into play. But England, having played three tests, you know, that's going to be tough for Pakistan.
Yeah. I think you're spot on there. England have had a lead in now, and they're hitting their straps. You know, their bowlers are starting to fire. Their batters are brilliant, especially in their own condition. But I wouldn't mind staying on this for a little while, just talking about a bit more about Pakistan and some of their guys to look out for. And I think a key man for Pakistan is going to be Babar Azam. I think that's a given. Just looking at his last seven innings, he scored 400s. Now, I know those innings were a little while ago and potentially in different conditions, but you know, I think he's going to be a big man that they can build.
Totally agree. I love watching him play. I mean, if he keeps going on that curve, you know, he struggled a bit in test cricket when he started. I mean, you played a couple against him early on, but the curve's on the incline. Yeah, you know, I think he's going to be in the top echelon batsman in the world.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's just him finding his feet in test cricket, and you start to get that self-belief after, you know, you get backed and backed to play more games and own your role and own your spot. He is, without a doubt, owning his role and spot right now, and he's doing a great job for them. Another guy I was interested in that was taking an indefinite break from test cricket but has come back and said he'd play for Pakistan is Wahab Riaz. If he comes back in, that's an experienced bowling attack. He could really help some of the young guys like Nazim Shah, help him along. You know, we're talking fast.
Dean Afridi's a gun as well, isn't he? He's going to take over 200 test wickets easy.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And it's just exciting. I think they've got some real pace that they'll be able to utilise in England and hopefully some experience there as well.
And I think Mohammed Abbas, who might have been injured, you know, didn't play the first test against us last summer, but he, big factor in England. He'll get a lot of wickets over there.
Yeah, and he's played a bit of county cricket as well, so he'll probably understand the conditions and what he'll need to do when he's running into bowl. But finally, I think just while we're on it, the big question is, having seen the test with West Indies, whether they go two spin or just the one. It seems to be like some quite dry wickets at the moment.
Yeah. It says that. I don't know if England have got a match-winning spinner, you know, whether it's going to take, you know, you take a second spinner over someone like, I'm thinking Broad, and, you know, one of their quicks Archer they're talking about, aren't they? It'd be a big call.
Big call. I mean, it's hard to bring in another spinner when your quicks are that good. You just back them in those conditions and, you know, back their skills.
Yeah, definitely.
While we're in England, this is one of my more favourite stories. Happened overnight. England have been playing Ireland in some one day internationals, and now it was a 3 1-day internationals. The first two, happy to talk about a little bit, but you know, maybe we'll come back to them. But last night, Flem, Ireland got up against the old rivals. I mean, just great to
boom.
See.
Yeah, boom. We just love it. They think they're going to smash them. Hundreds from Irish players.
Yep.
O'Brien again, who's been a bit of a nemesis of English cricket. He's a big man. He hits a long ball, but little dint for England, who I mean, you played against them in the semi. I mean, the build-up, I mean, their previous couple of years, I mean, I think they were taking one-day cricket to a level, batting-wise, that I'd never seen.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I think the way England have been setting up their one-day team probably over the last maybe 5 to 6 years, I think has been very, very impressive. They backed in some younger players, gave them a lot of games, and for the last 2 to 3 years, they've been reaping those rewards. Very consistent,
yeah.
Very consistent players, selections. Guys like, you know, Bairstow and Roy at the top there, just doing unbelievable things. We saw Bairstow in the second game go absolutely off. Got 50 off 21 balls, the fastest 50 for England, equaling the fast 50. Eventually finishing 82 off 41. Like these guys like that just take a game away from you. It's been impressive to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many batting lineups. I mean, you know, some of the big names aren't even playing, you know, in this game, but they can hit all the way down. Like, you know, Willie, yeah. 51 off 42, you know, Curran, 38, Rashid's batting 10.
Yeah, mate, Adil Rashid's got first-class hundreds, plenty of them.
Yeah.
Well, he's a good batter and can swing the bat when he needs to clear the fence as well. So they're a dangerous attack, and I think having that depth with their batting order gives the top order so much more freedom just to play their natural game, knowing that they've got guys to come behind them as well.
Yeah,
I think they're a dangerous, dangerous side, especially with you know, half of their players playing Test cricket at this same time as well.
But guess what? They lost to Ireland. Bad luck. Move on.
Yeah. Bad luck. Well, while we're over there, and maybe you know, on the topic of Irish cricket, where county cricket started, has started back, and one of the stalwarts of county cricket is Tim Mercer playing for Middlesex. He's still going. It happened to be his birthday during the week. So happy birthday.
How old is he?
52, I think the boys told me. But no, he's looking like he's 18 every time he runs in. So that was great. But not only did he have his birthday, he also got a fifer to celebrate. So well done. And also just a couple of the other old boys.
Well, I see Darren Stevens still playing.
Darren Stevens
used to slog him, and he's getting the ball over. But yeah, good win by your boys, Middlesex. I saw Dizzy's. Sussex had a loss, but and for the Bob Willis Cup too. You know what a legend, Bobby. I think they've released a book on his life. So I'm glad it's named, and I'm glad they're playing cricket over there.
Yeah, it is really good to see. And talking to a few of the boys over there, they're absolutely loving it, and obviously doing everything within the rules of the COVID restrictions. And it's just great to see some live cricket out there again, especially at a domestic level.
Yep.
Coming back to Australia, we've seen one of the greats come back to Melbourne, Flynn, in Meg Lanning. She went and had a little... let's say vacation over in Perth, and Melbourne have welcomed her back with open arms. Yeah. I would have thought she's back into the Spurs.
My daughter's very happy. They're very happy. They want to watch Meg.
Yep.
For the Stars.
And she's a Melbourne girl, Victorian. It's just great to see her come back. Everyone was always, you know, a bit shocked at the move over to Perth. But it's great to see a Victorian return home. And I think she'll do amazing things with the Stars as she was doing when she was first playing there as well.
Yep, and fair to say the Stars need it too. There's some really good young talent, you know, Annabelle Sutherland, Tess Flintoff. So they're only going to improve more being around Meg Lanning.
Yeah, exactly right. Her experience is going to be great for them, and hopefully they can drive their game. Finally, for Newsweek, this week is 1 year on from Steve Smith's return to Test cricket, in which was emphatic form with two hundreds back-to-back hundreds against England in the first Ashes test at Edgbaston. Just extraordinary scenes, Flem. Only the fifth Australian ever to go back-to-back hundreds in an Ashes test. And it was just great to remember that was a year ago.
It feels like about 5 years ago, seeing we've been in lockdown. But, it was inspirational. We weren't sure how they were going to go. You know, Warner was very good in the World Cup. Smithy was pretty good. But, geez, he lifted once he got the whites on. And some handy partnerships with the tail too. You know, Vegan Venom from Peter Siddle. You know, handy was that in the, you know, what a tough competitor Sids has been throughout his career. No doubt Justin Lang has identified that. But just a few words from yourself on someone like Stephen Smith. You know, what's he like as a teammate and to bat with?
Yeah, he's phenomenal to bat with. There's just, and I think everyone can see it, but he is reading the game at a different level. I think he understands what the bowler is trying to do to get him out and get everyone else out in the team. And so he is able to, you know, sort of get that message across to you and help you when you're out there, being like, all right, look, this might be planned. Have you thought about this? Maybe moving across or, you know, potentially give your stumps up to score through the offside, put pressure back on them. He's always thinking, and you can see that in the way he plays as well, because he seems to have so much time to do whatever he wants, and he's just that far in front of the game. It's awesome to watch.
I remember watching those innings, and he's almost one of the first batsmen I've ever seen this, because he's so weird out there with his mannerisms, and they got more extreme, didn't they? His leaves and pointing at the batsman and all that. You can feel like when they pan around to the slips, you feel like they're not going to sledge him, because they just feel like, well, what's it going to do to him anyway? And the bowlers have sort of got their arms going, well, what can we do? Like, you know, there's a real helplessness in when he gets into that zone, because what are your options? You can't sledge him. You can't intimidate him. You know, every tactic he seems to have a plan against.
Yeah, you definitely can't sledge him. You try and talk to him and that just puts him more and more into the zone. But he has that amazing ability of still hearing what you're saying, but just smiles, gets on with it, gets back in the zone when he's facing up for the next ball, and then either smacks it or leaves it in his fantastic manner and moves on to the next ball. It's awesome when you're playing with him, playing against him at Shield level a couple of times. It's been some tough days in the dirt.
Well played. Well, that was Pistol Pete's Things You Need to Know in Cricket This Week. And Pete, what about our guest this week? He's a Collingwood Premiership player, a life member of that club. He's now coaching over in Port Adelaide, but more importantly, down Gippsland way. They know him differently from the Pakenham Upper Yabbies. He starts as a batsman wicketkeeper, finished as a big quick. It's, of course, Tyson Goldsack. Thanks for joining us, Goldie.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. How exciting to flash back on my illustrious cricket career that it was.
Well, let's start there, big fella. So did you play all your cricket down there? And what happened? Was it just a growth spurt to becoming a wimpy wicketkeeper to a big quick?
Yeah, exactly. I started when I was 12. So I kind of played cricket long before I touched a footy or even considered playing footy. So we, under 12s, Friday night, it suited mum and dad's schedule really well. So like, yeah, you can do that, because football at that age is on a Sunday. And mum and dad are like, we're not giving away our Saturdays, which my brother occupied for football, for you to do that. So kind of the Friday night schedule worked, and yeah, come winter, it was all about the Saturday. So yeah, like you said, batsman, wicketkeeper, but just trying to find my way in the cricketing world. I had a growth spurt. Oh, would I have been maybe 15, 16? And then I think the guys at the Yabbies, the mighty Yabbies up in the hills, thought, you know, we'll give it the new pill and see what you can do with it.
Because you know who else started their career, Tice, as a as a keeper who then turned into a tearaway quick was Mitchell Starc. I'm assuming, I mean, you, like, it's a like for like here. I think maybe you've gone down the wrong path with footy, and maybe you'd stayed with the tearaway quick. You might have been.
Well, I definitely would have been just as quick and just as dangerous, but I unfortunately chose the footy path. But
left arm as well, aren't you?
Nah, I'm right. I bat left.
Ah.
But I'm a right arm. Yeah. Right arm over the wicket. Thanks, umpire.
What was your stock ball, Goldie?
No, just a little bit of in swing, but not much. Just more up and down. You've got to understand, we're not playing on turf and in Pakenham. It's a synthetic wicket. So you work your way up from C grade to B grade, still with a two piece. Then the four piece comes in for A grade. So that in swing starts to, you know, not swing as far as what you hope it would. We're talking 15 years. I used to swing it a mile. You know, the story has to grow.
I'm assuming you had a bit of a front-on action, maybe fell away a little bit and just in-swing the ball, and your threat was the one that straightened.
Yeah, the accidental straight one.
I saw
that one. Yeah. A good bit of bounce, as you can imagine, on a bouncy synthetic wicket. So you just get in the nip a little bit, and that was enough at that grade.
I was just going to say, you're always good at hitting the seam, mate. So you present that seam, use that bit of extra height, bit of bounce, get them playing back, and then and surprise them with the full one.
Yeah, exactly. And I surprise myself with the full one usually. That's probably not where I'm aiming for it. The guy that was bowling from the other end used to ball cross seam the whole time. So I'd have a good over, you know, and you'd kind of have a few rough spots around the seam, but then I'd get it back and it would just be a mess. So it's basically the end of my day from there on in.
Well,
no swing.
I'm a former swing bowler. I am the bowlologist. If you're holding cross seam with the new ball, name and shame, who was it?
His name was Shannon O'Brien. You know,
Bloody O'Brien.
And you just can't trust him. Can't trust the O'Briens. But the thing is, he'd get it to nip just every now and then. But the damage that had been done to the, you know, to the side that you're trying to shine. There's no coming back from that.
And he never hit the same side six times. So you're not coming back with the ball in perfect conditions. Absolutely. It's just both gone.
But in saying that, with my talent alone, I'd still got it to hoop back in.
Right.
You want to talk about some spells? How long do we have? I could be here all day.
Well, give us your favourite, a spell or a ball that you remember.
I was actually talking to Hank just this week about it. It was my final game, believe it or not. And this is where my career could have taken off. Footy took the limelight and my attention. But I was out at Clyde, and we're meant to play on turf just this week alone. And heavy rain through that week, of course, sent us back to the Clyde home ground on the synthetic. New pill down the hill, as we said. Got it in the... And I took forfa, and they were all bowled, which I'll hold on to. I've held on to it very tightly since. Even one guy left it outside off stump. I mean, when you got the sack off the long run, hooping them in, you can't be leaving those balls. off stump, probably off and middle, out of the ground. And then that was it. Cue in the rack.
Perfect. If you're going to end on a game, you're on one where you've shouldered arms and forfa. Thanks for coming.
And let's not talk about the batting performance, because that kind of fell away pretty dramatically once I stuck it in the bowl.
And Goldie, so we will finish, I think, with your favourite cricket 11 of all time. But for your footy, let's go to, you know, the obvious highlight, 2010 grand final, the replay. You know, can you talk about how you come into the team, and then your mum backed you, didn't she? And you didn't let her down.
Nah, she knows a good thing when she sees it. She also backed me for best on ground, so she probably doesn't know a good thing when she sees it. But no, I'm not telling lies here, guys. This is all true. She she had $5 me for best on ground and for first goal. I said, keep the money in the bank, mum. It'll gain more interest overnight. But sure enough, because I started on the bench. But let's go, if we go a week earlier, I got dropped. So I played the prelim. And we smacked the Cats, you know, 10 goals or thereabouts. So you're kind of thinking, you know, the team is you know, produce what we wanted and go into a grand final, and you're quietly confident and you hold your spot. But I was still fairly young, only a few years in, and a little bit nervous at the selection table. And like we know, it didn't go my way. Didn't find out until later in the week. So you're still kind of hanging on for that bit of hope till late in the week. And Mick gave me the news. It was on the Friday, the day before, which is nice. But then you go out. So from then, and like, you know, bit of disappointment, you get drafted to play, and then you play to play finals, and finals, obviously, the winning granny. So to get to that final bit and not see it through was disappointing. But your mindset turns pretty quickly. We're in team sport for a reason, and it's not for self accolades, but to, you know, get the premiership and the glory for the team. So you kind of turn your attention to the guys playing, and all right, let's go out there and win. If I'm not playing, I still don't want St Kilda to win. You know, I wasn't that bitter at the decision. There's still 22 of my mates going out. 21 of my mates, no. 22 of my mates. And the draw happened, and we had to come back and play another game. And Mick was kinder to me on that week, where he told me on the Tuesday. So called me into his office on the Tuesday. I thought, well, this is going one of two ways. I'm going to enjoy this week or not. And then he said, yeah, gave me the thumbs up and said, you get ready to play. The rest is history. I started on the bench and came on about 5 minutes on, and Trav Cloak had a shot and sprayed it and hit me lace out. I mean, he said he was passing, but I think he genuinely was passing the ball, and he got me. And 87-1, mum cleaned up, so it was good.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
You touched on it a bit there, Goldie, but in the space of 2 weeks, you've gone from like an extreme high winning the prelim to an extreme low to not being able to play to then, you know, actually, I get another chance at this grand final business and then winning it. Take us just a little bit more through those emotions that you're feeling, and if there was anything you did between the weeks to either keep your level or anyone you spoke to try and to work through something high and low like that.
I think the first week is kind of, that's hard because it's not hard, but you're just focused on playing, and you can't envision getting dropped. You're just kind of holding on to hope, like, yeah, let's train as best as I can. It's a 7-day break, you know, so you have that time. It might have been 8-day break actually. So you have the time to prove to the coaches that you're feeling good, you're ready to go, and try and keep sowing the seed. Gee, I played well on the weekend, didn't I? How about that kick that I didn't get? Nah. But yeah, so the week leading up is just all about hoping that it goes your way. From the moment that it doesn't, well, then you start to reflect. You start putting things into perspective. There's a bit of disappointment straight away. But I'd be naive to think that it wasn't going to go a different way, being so late in the week until it was confirmed. So if I knew for sure, I would have found out on the Wednesday. For example, so the fact that it got dragged on, you start losing a little bit of hope by the hour almost.
Yeah.
So you get told, and then you put things into perspective. And I've kind of, come from a background where we're just kind of just, happy-go-lucky, so to say, and just kind of very thankful for where we are, and we've worked hard for everything we've got. So you have that where, well, I obviously didn't put myself in a position where they couldn't drop me. It was kind of my main thought. If I'd played so well and I'd been playing so well in the lead up, then there's no way they could drop me and they just have to pick me. So a little bit has to fall on me. You'd be silly, and you wouldn't be a professional athlete if you kept blaming the coaches for the decisions made. That's mainly up to you. And then personally, I had a best friend of mine that went through a hard time. When I got drafted, he was working on a farm, like a ranch in Broken Hill, as a jackaroo, and he had an accident. He broke his neck. So I kind of saw what he went through early days and fought through as my footy career took off, and his life seemingly went the other way. And he's battled on and showed great resistance and resilience through that. So you kind of put your life into perspective that you know, it's not all bad. It's a game of footy. Oh, and yes, definitely. We're here to do that, but then you still have that in the background. So not to say that you can't enjoy things when it falls your way, but also not that, yeah, the life's not over. You know, so I kind of had that. And then comes to the day of the game, and then you're in the rooms and it's like, well, go out there, boys. Let's do this. Let's win, because, you know, not being part of a winning team is still better than being part of a losing team or not being part of a losing team. So, yeah. Then it was the siren goes and think, well, now's my second chance. What can we do? So it was me, Tarkin Lockyer, Cameron Wood, straight back to what was the Lexus Centre at the time, and smashed ourselves on the treadmill and gave ourselves every chance to play. So Maxie tells a story, Nick Maxwell, of him coming in after the game, and he just hears this thumping on treadmills and opens the door to our altitude room, and there's the three of us. Admittedly, Woody's probably not going quite as fast as what we are. He's a big ruck. Big ruckman, and can't turn the legs over as quick, but he was trying his heart out. And then from there you get the news early on, and then you can just enjoy it. You got huge numbers to training each day. The sun's out. The grass smells a little bit different in finals football. So, yeah, you just can enjoy that. And, yeah, without the fanfare of the parade and all that leading up to the second game, you just get down to business. So, it was good. After the game, Pete.
Yeah. we might touch on after the game a little bit later.
I think we'll get there.
Mentors.
I was actually filling in for Triple M Brecky on the Monday with Eddie, and with 2 minutes to go, the producer goes, "Ed's not here. You're going to have to lead us in." And I go, "I haven't even thought about this." 10 seconds to go. Ed comes in his suit and just goes on a 5-10 minute rant, like unbelievable. You know, how good's this for footy? And what an absolute freak. But after the draw, I mean, I think like St Kilda felt like they should have won the first granny. What was the feeling within Collingwood? Like, that might have been the case and we've got another chance, or that we can win this? And obviously the game was like a dream, really, from 10 minutes into the first quarter.
Yeah, the thought was we hadn't played our best footy on the first grand final. We're still in it, but they were coming home with a wet sail. So they, if there was another 5 minutes to go, you'd think that they would have come over the top. And there was an unlucky bounce had to go the other way. That then you do lose it, but stars aligned, got the second chance. And I think that the next week we were even more confident, knowing that we had played so poorly. You know, at the time you think you're playing badly, or they did. I'm not putting myself in that, in that cart. I didn't play badly at all.
Exactly.
I cheered my heart out.
You were great from the stands, mate.
I burst on in the stands. But then just realising we did so much wrong, put those into action, and away we went, and never looked back. And it was one of the days to win a grand final in that manner, where you can put the game away and enjoy the last quarter. It was pretty nice.
In terms of your prep going into a grand final, did that change at all? Like, I know sort of the lead-in week, maybe a bit different considering that it was obviously the replay of the draw, but did you change anything from your normal game, superstitions or routine or whatever you have, or did you kind of just take it as just another game?
No, I think you just – we're creatures of habit in a sense that you find something that works and you don't want to stray too far from that, whether it's that superstition or it's just routine. I always put it down, it's like drying yourself after you have a shower. You dry yourself the same every single time. You don't know you're doing it, but you just do it because that's just what you know, and that's just what you feel is the best way to get you prepared to get dressed. Well, I think that's pretty similar with a footy week, where you do your training. The sessions are the same each week, in a sense, if you have a main session, a day off into a captain's run. So kind of once you get to your day off, everything lines up the same, and you just got to go through the motions. It's like similar when you play interstate. I mean, we don't go there that often, or we never used to. But once you get on the plane, you don't have to think because everything's just lined up and you just kind of roll on. So I think we're creatures of habit and routine driven and routine based. And yep. yeah, so the less thinking, the better. And then you just know, even for a meal before a game, I don't eat the same meal because I'm superstitious about it. I just know that that one works, and I'm probably too scared to try another one from week to week.
Hey, mate, and so
after, that answers the question.
After you won the granny, did you go straight back on the treadmill, or did you decide to have a few beers?
I thought I was in pretty good shape at that stage, so I thought I'd done enough work. It's time to let myself go. Well, it was weird. It was because the season got pushed back a week later. It meant everyone's holidays came forward a week earlier from the season end. So usually you have a bit of time around Melbourne, a week or so, but everyone had their holidays booked in. So you only had three, 4, 5 days to celebrate, which seems like a lot. It's not. It's not enough. It's a big effort. It's a big effort. So
need a couple of weeks for something like that.
Yeah, and then, you know, to make matters worse, it was our 10th, it was 10-year reunion this year, and we had a big 3-day gala over in Melbourne. So I thought I'd get the weekend over. We played Geelong on the Friday, and then we have a couple of functions, and the Sunday was for the players, and it just all canned. So it's we'll have to 11th year anniversary next year. Fingers crossed. If Victoria get into shape and sort themselves out.
Maybe everyone will have to go into a 2-week quarantine, just come to Adelaide with you, mate.
It will be worth it, I can guarantee you.
Well, just on that, Goldie, we have a segment called Our Guide to, you know, bowling an outswinger or surviving rooming with Merv Hughes. Could you talk about your guide to surviving celebrating with the Collingwood Rat Pack?
Yeah. Well, take your time. It would be the
the Rat Pack.
So the Rat Pack from start to finish would include Alan Dydak, Ben Johnson, Heath Shaw, Zane Swan, Chris Tarrant, and Reece Shaw. And that would be start to finish. Obviously, Taz and Reece, I only played with Reece in my first year, and Taz later on actually when he came back. So I didn't get the full Rat Pack for the full 13 years I was there, but you know, just a few years was enough. And yeah, the strong group of Did, Swanee, Ben Johnson, Heath Shaw was, you want to time your run a little bit. You don't want to get overexcited. How good's this? Let's get into it. Let's see how many beers we can put down, because you're not going to win and you're not going to enjoy the afternoon, let alone 11, 12 o'clock during the day. So it's about kind of just coming in and then going out, you know. So you come in, bit of time, bit of fun, right? I'm just going to go isolate myself a little bit. So I've been self-isolated for years. This is not a new thing. Under COVID rules, well, you can't give yourself fully to the Rat Pack for the whole day or night. It's just not going to end well. So
that's where was Daisy Thomas in the rankings there? Daisy.
So Daisy found himself kind of edging towards the Rat Pack later on in the career, whether by default or want to be in there, maybe more of the latter. And then I guess you need a couple of misdemeanors to get to be true Rat Pack. So he didn't have the misdemeanors early. He probably has lately. he probably is now. Yeah, he's now in the Rat Pack post-retirement. He's always been around. His Daisy's very lively, very up and about. So, again, not one to stay clear of early in the day.
Well, I hope you heed your own warning next year at the 11th anniversary then, Goldie.
Absolutely not. No, it's no holds barred at 11 years. There's no footy career to worry about now, so I can just drink as much beer as I want.
Won't be saving yourself for day three then, just
how hard. Absolutely not. It's going to be a heavily degrading wicket, and I'm looking at score runs day one, day two.
Smart, mate. You're Chennai with turning square by day three. You've got to make your runs day one and two.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not great against spin, so I just want to play the ball on its merits early.
Nice straight back.
Play your shots. Play your shots. And Goldie, unfortunately, a sign of your career was injuries and illness as well. Can you talk about a few of those through the journey?
Yeah. So early on, was illness, and then later on was injury. And they're kind of separated. So I had viral meningitis early, which it's an infection of the fluid around your brain and spine, which is, it's pretty nasty. It's not comfortable.
No.
So I was a week in hospital for that one. And I have the body shape where if I'm not doing weights or eating enough, I'll just drop weight. So I lost about 10 kilos when I had that, because I was, you know, laid up, not eating. And that was 2010. So that was I missed the first half of 2010 on the back of that. We played up at Alice Springs, it was, in a preseason game. And they say there's two ways of getting meningitis. You know, bitten by a mosquito, or you can eat poo. So
okay.
The mozzies are rife up there, and I'm going with the mozzies, and you can't talk me otherwise. That was 10, and then 11 I had glandular fever just at the back in the preseason. So that was hospital bound for a week again. Lost 14 kilos for that one. Couldn't eat for about 3 weeks. So obviously going to lose weight. So then just trying to build up. There was probably, the meningitis was bad early days, as in painful bad. Glandular fever was coming back, was the hard part, because you have to really slowly get yourself in.
Yeah.
I remember I was walking the TAM one day on my recovery back, and my heart rate was about 160 just walking, and it's just because your body can't deal with the extra pressure or stress. So that took a little bit to get back, but we do. In good time, you get back. And then from there, I went kind of surgery after surgery, in the sense of every preseason or end of season. Ankle. So I've had ankle surgery. I've had two knee surgeries, hip surgery, shoulder surgery, thumb surgery. I've broken my nose. Clearly. About four or five times. Yeah. The last time I went under to get it straightened to make sure they do a good job. He didn't. He didn't do a good job. It's still.
I'll be getting my money back.
I did the first. Yeah. Jack Kennedy it was. I did the first couple in the chair and thought, I'm never doing that again. But they're injuries, and you do come back from what changes your mindset is whether or not the injury is okay and the surgery you can deal with. It's just coming back, and whether or not you can put yourself at risk of getting it again. And you got to weigh that up. I guess you get a little bit sorer as you get older. I say old in football years, 30 is old. Yeah, 33 now. But it's just kind of that trying to fight back with the risk of redoing it.
Yeah, which is tough. I guess. Sort of the injury that kind of stands out for me, and it probably stands out because I knew you during the time, was in 2018, and you did your ACL, what was it, the last game before the season started, which is basically a season-ending injury, especially that close to the season. You're talking about coming back from something like that. This is something that happens, close to the end of your career. How driven were you to get back from something like that in time to try and play some games to potentially, further your career again?
Yeah, I guess it came at the, I want to say the perfect time. There's no perfect time, but age-wise, it came at a time where I could rush myself back, in a sense of I wasn't risking further injury, or the risk of further injury wasn't great, in a sense of if I redid it coming back, well, I'd just hang the boots up and I'd be okay with that. So I did it. Like I said, so it was a week or 2 weeks before the start of the season. I had surgery opening night of the season because Julian Fowler was away snow skiing at the time. So I said, oh, I'll wait for you, mate. Don't worry, take your time. But it also allowed me to do a lot of stuff in the gym to prepare myself to get surgery. So that was a real benefit in hindsight. So you don't lose as much muscle if you do the work before surgery. And then coming back, it was just like, oh, I'm all in here. So whatever it takes, you just give me the program and I'll push the boundaries where I see fit. There's two ways of doing it. You can go off a timeline or you can go off a schedule or a checklist. So the checklist comes with a timeline or recommended timeline. I said, oh, let's just get rid of that. I said, when I hit these things or these marks, allow me to progress. And, we had a mutual agreement with the medicos. I said, guys, I'm about to make you look really good. Just let me go about my business. But they were concerned because they don't want they don't want that on their conscience where a player's trying to return too quickly and he goes down again, which you see happen all too often with recurring knees. So, yeah. Oh, so then I just pushed it along and got to a stage where I'm ready to play, and they're like, you can't come back that soon. They thought I'd come back early, but not as early as I did. So I got to.
So how many weeks was that? Oh, 19. Wow.
19. Yeah, I got to 19 and got the full, tick of approval and all clear, right to play. But I actually had wrecked my back about 2 weeks before that, doing all the weights and all the rest of it. So that actually held me out for 3 weeks. So I had to get cortisone or epidural. I had to get local anesthetic all the way down my spine, and some nerves burnt in my back from a back surgery.
Is that one of those things where because your legs are injured, you just spend all your time on your upper body, like trying to get your pipes going and bigger back, bigger chest, bigger tries, bigger eyes?
kind of. So now that was actually because I was squatting, so spine compression from squatting. But let's talk about the upper body. Every time someone's done their knee in the past, they've gone to Europe for a European summer holiday. So as soon as I did it and I found out I did it, I was pretty emotional. I'm about to miss a year. I get home and my wife, Chelsea, goes, "So, Europe?" So Chelsea's just been told I've done my ACL. Just let the dust settle just a little bit, if you don't mind. But we did. We booked it in and went to Europe. So the first kind of 6 weeks, 7 weeks, at the club, I'm like, I'll do the legs, but I also need an hour a day just to try and get me in some sort of shape. As you can see, it doesn't come naturally, so just wanted to look my best over in Europe. I think we achieved that somewhat.
And with all the disappointment, selection, illness, injury, was that in some ways what pushed you towards coaching?
I always had a passion for it. I had good coaches early on. I had Alan Richardson, Gavin Brown, Brad Scott in the development stages of my career. And I really enjoyed the way they went about it, where it was more about the feeling between the coach and the player. And a little bit of kind of skill development, of course, but more about insight and how do I get the best out of a player and not just a one-size-fits-all. Work one-on-one with you and a different one-on-one with you because, different players and you respond differently. So I really enjoyed that. And spending, it was 13 years in the system, and you can pick apart little bits from different coaches. I enjoy working with people one-on-one and especially guys that I think have room to develop. This opportunity came up in Adelaide and, I was thrilled. So got a few years here in Adelaide and at Port, obviously, a little bit different this year.
Is that now looking at Port, they were out of the top eight last year. They go and recruit one Tyson Goldsack and they're sitting top of the table. Is that completely just down to you?
Well, it would have to be very coincidental, wouldn't it? for it to just go. There is only one major change in the coaching department as far as I've seen. So.
The coaching philosophy is working, mate.
To be fair, they've got a great list. Last year, we saw a few guys debut. Rosie and Butters and Dersma, and they're stars. So they've just kind of injected that excitement to the players that were already there, and they had a good core. And everyone's just playing their role, and Ken's doing a great job just keeping everyone aligned. Assistant coaches are great. So for me personally, for my development as a coach, I see it as I'm into my apprenticeship as a coach and I've got great people to learn off. Brett Montgomery is my line coach. He's a genius and I get to work with him day in, day out, which is great. So I'll just pick his brain as much as I can.
And it's a bit of a trendy role, isn't it? The playing coach. We see it in the VFL. Brett DeLidio was going to do it. I think Andy Otten's for Box Hill. It hasn't worked. Will you look to still try and play next year?
I will. I am getting a bit long in the tooth. But, I've pretty much had 18 off, played 19. I've had this year off. So if I'm just going to get one, I reckon I could play until I'm 40. That'll be great. So I still get to train. So actually, if we're lower numbers or or odd numbers at training, they'll throw me a jumper and in I go. So I still get to play or train with them during the week. But I was really looking forward to it because a lot happens on the field, which from a coaching perspective, you don't really get to see or feel in the box. So to be out there, and then I'd be kind of going through the game on vision and coding it, I would have been out there to feel what it felt like and what kind of pressure you're under or the voice out there. So you can kind of get that feeling, which I think would go a long way in your development and how you kind of help your players get better.
Because you are closer to the player age than probably some of the other coaches, do you find yourself as that sort of little mediator maybe between player and coach, kind of sometimes sticking up for the players if a coach is absolutely going to town on them?
Less so sticking up for them, but more so implanting when they talk about something or how would a player be feeling about a certain, if it's feedback, on the back of a game or so, well, how would that be best received? And best given, and also just when if I take training, it's like I'll give you guys a rest because I know how hard this drill is because I was just doing it, in order to get quality out. Where as a coach, if you're out for a few years, I think you tend to forget that you actually get better quality of training with a spell, and players appreciate that. Get them in, have a chat, just for younger blokes to learn off the older blokes by working with each other more. I think is beneficial. So, I think coaches do forget it pretty quickly if you don't stay right involved and right on top of it. So, at the moment, I've got the lens of a player still, but in a coaching role. So, I'll try and impart what I see as much as I can, but without being the squeaky wheel, of course.
No, I just think it's unique and it's a great role to have that balance. That's fantastic. And you're a long time retired too, so to play. But a couple of more questions. Want to finish with your all-time cricket 11. But people ask why I get so annoyed at AFL umpires. And this is a scenario right here. You played 165 great games for Collingwood and didn't get one bloody Brownlow vote. All right? So if I had to identify Goldie, 2007, round 21, right? You beat the Swans by 25
Sydney?
Points.
Yeah, I know.
Goodsy gets three votes. I don't even know why. So the winning team, Swanee gets two, right? And Pendlebury gets one, right? Swanee gets 20 for 24 possessions. I mean, that's half of what he normally gets. I'll give Pennells his one vote. You got 25 bloody disposals. And you had four tackles. And Swanee had one.
I think I was playing on Mickey O'Loughlin at the time too. So
and you gave him a bar.
Year. Absolute bar. I don't know if you got his stats there, but they wouldn't look tricky. Pretty. Sorry if you're watching on there, Mick. But,
he had six disposals. So I've been doing a little thing, and it's a pastime of mine. I want retrospective Brownlow votes given. And you're going to be my first case. Are you with me?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. Hey, am I getting one or two or three?
No, you're getting three because Goodsy, they lost. I know three. Goodsy's a superstar, but I'm giving you three because you had the most possessions, perfect. More than Swanee at that.
What's more important, having a three votes or having the record of not getting a Brownlow vote? Longest serving Collingwood player without a Brownlow vote.
Yeah, but guess what? There was a Brownlow
records nine. Are good.
I tweeted out to Tom Lonigan and he was up to 250 and I said, good luck, big fella. And he liked the tweet. He didn't get a vote.
Okay,
hey, mate, what about your favourite cricket 11? Can you do that quickly?
All right. Yep, I can. So it's going through the years that I was really into cricket. So 2002, 2003 onwards. So keep that in mind. And it's not just the cricket ability, but they're off field as well. So got Matthew Hayden. Opening with Bobby Quiney, because Bobby's great on the drink after hours, which I like. Ponting's at three, probably the captain, fair to say. PSV Hanscom comes in at four. Again,
thanks,
I know what he can do. I know what he can do off the field, which is a big tick. Mike Hussey, I love Huss.
Mr. Cricket.
I love left-handers. I'm a left-hander myself, so there's a few lefties in here. I was tossed up between Wade and Gilly for the key position. I asked Hank if he wanted it. He said, I don't want the gloves. So I said, fair enough. So Wade gets it. Again, I'm putting myself in first sleep if I'm there. So I want the good chat from the wicketkeeper. So he's in. Mitchell Johnson, obviously, is ruthless and love the way he goes about it. Warnie at 8, because, again, off-field stuff. Not a bad bowler, sure, but off-field will bring a lot. I need Nath Lyon in there as well, you know, because I like his off-field stuff. Not so much on the drink, but just having a good time and locking down one end. Now, I've got McGrath and Gillespie to round out my bowlers. But if I need a more batters, then maybe Damien Martin comes in. I'm tossing up. Yeah. I don't know where to sit. Depends on where I'm going. Right-handed, but just, yeah, love what he bring and love what he did back in the day. So that's
Goldie, that is absolute gold. We'll be getting that out there. But, mate, thanks a lot for coming on the Bowlology Report. Most of all, well done in your career, but good luck with the coaching career there at Port Adelaide.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us. It's been a lot of fun.
Great stuff, Goldie.
Hey, go to the Yabbies. Go to the Yabbies. If you ever find yourself in Packing Them Upper, swing by and say good day.
Joel Sack to get the first goal of the grand final. Not too many. Probably not even here. Joel Sack checks it.
And Pete, how good was that talking to Goldie?
Oh, awesome. He's a great man, Goldie. Always up for a bit of banter, a bit of fun, but a smart man as well. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I think at the end of his career, you know, you could see that his teammates admire him. He's going to do some good things in the coaching world and who knows, might get the ball in hand, bowl some bounces at some stage. But, hey, mate, Goldie was fantastic. Just finishing up, a shout-out to our Mexican listeners of the last podcast. Maybe you inspired them, Pete. All two of them.
Yep.
I wanted to give an update on Mexican cricket, you know, the games between the Tequilas, the Super Kings and the Tyrants. But I looked up the Mexican cricket website and all it had was, in big headlines, no upcoming events at the moment.
Oh, that's a shame. That's a shame.
So,
it's going big in Mexico.
Well, we might have to go over there and do a Bowlology Report by that and catch up with those two cricket fans, I would have thought. But, hey, mate, thanks a lot. We'll be back next week with another big name. To everyone out there, particularly us Victorians, stay safe, be responsible. But well played, Pete, and we'll be back next week.
Look forward to it, Flynn.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.